This is the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, featuring your host, Jenna Erlandson.
Hey guys, and welcome to our second Bridge of the Faithful podcast. And first, I just wanted to thank all of you who played any part in getting this podcast off the ground. And if you're listening to this right now, you're one of those people. I had people who listened to my rough draft versions or just listened to me describe my passion and my ideas for what this next year is going to look like with these podcasts. I had my husband, obviously, who made it sound so professional. I have a friend who does design and she helped make my website look a little bit more complete and finished. To all of you who took the time to listen to me talk at you for 10 minutes to describe just an idea of what I had and how we got to this point. And not only did you stop and listen for 10 minutes, but then you took the time to just give me encouraging words or describe what it meant to you. And I've been blessed beyond anything I could possibly have imagined. And I am just so excited to be on this faith journey with all of you. So for these next two episodes, we're going to stay on the same vein of an introduction to let you know where I'm at. I really want you to understand my heart before we dig into these deep ideas about faithfulness, just so that we're on the same page, so you know where I'm standing, where it comes from, and these basic ideas that I really want to have deep rooted in you before we move on. So today's episode is going to be what is God's faithfulness in relation to our metaphorical bridge of the faithful. And the next episode is going to be what is our role, what is our responsibility in our response with this bridge of the faithful. Going back a few years when I was a kid in Sunday school class, someone once described the cross as a bridge from man to God. And for some reason, this image just imprinted in my mind. And it kind of was like two dead-end cliffs that were impossible to traverse, very far away, where you could kind of see across, but you could never make it over. And someone had taken a giant cross and just wedged it between the two where it fit perfectly. And so it created this bridge between for people to travel across to get to the other side. And I just loved this image. And I know it's cliche, but it just really was beautiful to me. And I had always wanted to be able to describe it somehow artistically that would mean the same to other people as it did to me. At first, I thought it was going to be an artistic drawing or painting. But if any of you know me, you know that that would never happen because I am just not gifted in any way, shape, or form with any physical art in that way. So then I considered something poetic or song again or just written something, and every time I tried to get it down, it just came out choppy. It just didn't feel right. It wasn't fulfilling that beautiful tension that I really wanted to portray. So it's interesting to me how 20-something years later, after hearing this and just trying to struggle to get this, that it just so happens it all fits together with this bridge of the faithful. And I don't think that I'm still quite at a level where it really describes how I really see it in my mind, but this is the closest I've gotten, and it's still powerful to me, so I want to share it. The big question that we have to answer before we move on first is, why do we even need a bridge? And going back to the basics, we're going to all be at the same level for those of you who may not know the story or those of you who may not know all of the details or just a refresher course in a different medium for anyone who wants to think about it. So this all begins with our relationship with God. God created earth and he created us, man. He created Adam and Eve. And this relationship was very similar to that of a parent with a child. He created them just like we create our children. He loved them, and the relationship was perfect. It was innocent. There was open communication. There was no shame whatsoever, nothing to be afraid of. It was honest, perfect, and so full of joy. And sometime in that same time continuum, we don't know exactly where or when this all takes place, but in the heavenly realms, There was a fight between God and one of his head angels, Lucifer, or as we know him, Satan. Satan used to be one of God's head angels. He was beautiful. He was powerful. And in that, he became prideful. And he wanted to be at the same level of God. He wanted to be God. And that created a fight, which led to God winning and casting Satan and his followers out of heaven. So in that, Satan really wanted to get back and get his revenge at God for sending him out. And what he wanted to do was just tear apart anything that God loved. So, of course, one of the most precious things to God was Adam and Eve. So the one, I'm sure this was one of the first things he went toward, was just trying to get them away from God. So in that, he tricked Adam and Eve into eating the apple. And I know that it sounds so ridiculous that eating an apple would cause this problem, but it's not just the act of eating the apple, which is bad enough in itself, but it's the disobedience and the breaking of that perfect. He took a perfect, beautiful relationship and cracked it in half with that one action, and he knew that that's what was going to happen. So this created that rift between God and man, akin to death. Just like death separates us from those we love, when they die, we do not see them again, we do not touch them again, we don't hear their voice again. That is what that created. So when God told Adam and Eve that they would die if they took a bite of the apple, that's what happened. So just like that, it is physically impossible and forever separates us from God. There is no crossing from our side back over to God. But note how I say we can't do it, but God can, and he did. So while we've never been able to make the trek back over to God's presence short of dying, throughout the Bible, God has been with man the whole time. And I'm not going to go into the Old Testament sacrifices and covenants at this time, but what I do want to point out is that God gave man the formula and complete step-by-step instructions on how to cross that chasm completely by ourselves. And though many have tried, nobody has been able to succeed because nobody's been equipped to be able to deal with all of those. We look at the Ten Commandments and all of that and all the laws that God gave to let us know exactly what it takes to cross, and nobody can do all of that. So when I think of trekking a bridge, I think of a rope bridge over an abyss, something like Indiana Jones would have crossed. And I think that a rope bridge actually fits well with our metaphorical bridge of the faithful. So rope bridges were developed by the Inca tribe in Peru. And I don't know much about Peruvian geography, but I do know that the Andes Mountains spread across with the Amazon River snaking through, and which, as you can imagine, makes for some beautiful but extremely steep and dangerous ravines that could not be crossed. Our metaphorical chasm is permanent and it's infinite. There is no way around, no detour. It's a literal dead end. And at this ravine is where a beautiful ransom rescue takes place. When the Incas made their suspension bridges, they had to construct the whole bridge on land first. In a much too short metaphorical description, I see the Old Testament as God's construction phase. Later, we'll look at more specific people and specific situations, but from Adam to Noah to Abraham to Jacob to Moses to David and beyond, God was crafting and perfecting the foundation that would carry all of our weight, guide our path straight, and create our escape route that leads right into his arms. So back to the Incas, mostly when the time came for the assembly of the bridge, it was a team effort. And after braiding the rope together, it would be time to connect the two sides of the chasm. And usually this part was done by having one group of people on both sides of the ravine. One group would anchor the bridge down with these giant anchoring stones to hold the weight, and then somehow projectile the other end to the people on the other side, who would then pull it tight and anchor it down as well. However, rarely, if there was nobody to help, one lone architect of the bridge would have to do all of that by himself. He would have to take the bridge, go down, and come back up on the other side. And this is where I want you to stop and just imagine this action movie worthy rescue mission. And this may sound like I'm over romanticizing, but I actually believe that this doesn't even come close to how dramatic and intense it really was. In our metaphorical rope bridge assembly, Jesus carrying his cross to Golgotha is the same as him carrying the bridge to the ledge. He's already been injured before this even starting, and Satan knew what Jesus was up to, so he was really trying hard to stop him from doing this. And as I picture Jesus securing those anchor stones deep to hold the bridge, I hear the echo of the pounding of the nails into his hands and feet. And with a cry of, "It is finished," he began his descent into the chasm. And note that he claimed his victory before it was done. He called it for us to hear on the other side, to know he was coming, and he already won. He is faithful. And nobody really knows what Jesus faced in that abyss those 3 days. But what we do know is that he took on all of those dangers, those snares, those enemies, those traps, and the punishment that we all deserve and that we could never take on and end up on the other side alive. And on that Easter Sunday, as the mountains and trees held their breath, watching him so determined to get to the other end of that bridge to our side, the weight of the bridge on his back as he scaled the cliff, and when his hand reached the top and he pulls himself up in victory over death and hell, and he loudly pounds the last anchor stone into the ground, getting our attention and loudly declaring, "I love you. I took all of this on for you, and I have provided the way back to me. Come and follow me back home where you belong at my side." And the only question left to ask is, do we come? Romans 8:35-39. Can anything ever separate us from Christ's love? Does it mean he no longer loves us if we have trouble or calamity or are persecuted or hungry or destitute or in danger or threatened with death? As the scriptures say, "For your sake we are killed every day. We are being slaughtered like sheep." No, despite all of these things, overwhelming victory is ours through Christ who loved us. And I am convinced that nothing can ever separate us from God's love, neither death nor life, neither angels nor demons, neither our fears for today nor our worries about tomorrow. Not even the powers of hell can separate us from God's love. No power in the sky above or in the earth below. Indeed, nothing in all creation will ever be able to separate us from the love of God that is revealed in Christ Jesus our Lord.
This has been episode 2 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, entitled God Built the Bridge. For show notes, go to botfpodcast.com/episode/2.